Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, a show ostensibly about the upcoming performing arts scene here in the Bay Area. I'm your host, David LaTulip. A very different show today, an events calendar for that matter, in this brave new uncertain world that we're in with the concert halls and clubs closed. But I thought this would be an opportunity to peel back the curtain while the lights are out, to talk with some friends involved in the performing arts scene, and talk about how the coronavirus has affected them. Joining me by phone before the hour up will be freelance musicians Matt Zamella, Mads Toling, and Rick Walsh, as well as co-founding director of the SF Playhouse, Bill English. Regular contributor Peter Robinson will muse on activities to do while sheltering in place. And I'll begin with a conversation with Martin West, principal conductor of the SF Ballet, after this overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream by Felix Mendelssohn. Audiences were treated to just opening night of the Balanchine production, with subsequent performances being canceled. Stay with us. A generous helping of Mendelssohn's Overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream, written by some 17-year-old, a work that I was actually about to be playing this very week with a community orchestra here in San Francisco. Alas, that was canceled. And the full ballet in its full George Balanchine glory was one of the offerings for the spring season of the San Francisco Ballet, now fully canceled. Opening night of A Midsummer Night's Dream was all San Francisco was able to catch, alas. Joining me to talk about the ballet and the implications of the coronavirus on the San Francisco Ballet Company and the world we live in now is the principal conductor of the San Francisco Ballet, Martin West. Martin, welcome back to Open Air.
Thanks so much, David. Nice to be back.
Well, it is a very different world we're living in now. Actually, speaking of that recording we just heard, that was John Elliott Gardiner conducting the London Symphony. I kind of enjoyed his interpretation.
I don't know. So did I.
Yeah, he had a nice little glissando on the hee-haws there from the donkey sounds. That's 17 years old when he wrote that overture. That's just crazy.
He was a crazy man. He even wrote the octet. I don't know if people know the octet. He wrote that even early. He was 16 when he wrote that.
Man.
Just quite an amazing guy. And what amazing uplifting music as well. It's perfect for this period of our lives to listen to music like that.
We need both music for reflection and for the joy of music, which is why we all love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can you share with us, first of all, we only had an opportunity to catch, and I was lucky to be in the audience for that opening night, because the next day things were canceled for the whole season, including the balance of, five or six performances?
We had nine more to go, actually. It was devastating. We actually just found out, just literally 20 minutes before we opened the show, that that was going to be the last performance.
Wow.
So it was quite a strange experience, tell you.
That's not to mention all the outreach things that the ballet does with various groups in the city and school groups and such.
Unfortunately, everything's just had to come to a standstill. At the moment, we're just figuring out what we can do. I know we're doing a lot of work to try and make things available we can to our supporters online and things like that. It's such early days and such a shock that we're just scrambling around to do what we can to make things available. So, incidentally, I don't know if you know, David, that before the total shelter-in-place was put in place, we decided to try and do a live capture of Midsummer Night's Dream. So even though we only did one public performance, we did manage to perform it twice more.
Oh, great.
One was a test run, and then we did a live capture of it. So there is a performance that we're going to be releasing to the people who did buy tickets initially. And so they'll be able to watch it online, which is at least something we can do for the public.
We'll be watching for that. Well, while we're promoting that, why don't you tell us a little bit about the music and the choreography that was used for Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream? All music of Mendelssohn, but not all from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
No, absolutely, and actually, quite a lot of music I never heard of. Some music is very rarely heard in the concert hall. Balanchine spent I think it was 30 to 40 years coming up with the perfect music for each bit of the ballet. And true to Balanchine, he was very respectful of the music, and it's all just pure Mendelssohn from start to finish. So he used a lot of overtures that often Mendelssohn wrote a lot of music which is very descriptive, and so he managed to get some wonderful pieces which completely match the drama on the stage. It's really wonderful. The Melusina is an overture which I didn't know before. I had heard of it, but I didn't actually know it, and it's really fantastic. I'm going to put it into my repertoire now. It's very dramatic. It has it's about a water sprite, so there's lots of watery themes, but it's very loving. This overture from the first Walpurgisnacht, which is the equivalent of Halloween, so it's very dramatic, and it ends up on the day after Halloween, so it all ends up nicely. It was a perfect end to this story where everything's been going wrong. And everything turns out right in the end. Some wonderful question. There's another one, Heimke and Das Fremde, Auf dem Fremde, which is another piece that very rarely gets played. So it was a real treat to play this music, an hour and a half at least of music of Mendelssohn. Just so uplifting.
Like you, I was very pleased to discover some of this new music of Mendelssohn, and at least new to our ears, yeah.
Yeah, there's a great one, Atalia, which I'd never heard of, and that's a great story, a biblical story about a queen who basically she murders most of her family, I think, ends up being triumphant. But you wouldn't think it was a perfect for me, so much Night's Dream, but it makes a great bit of the story at the beginning where Puck and Oberon are trying to steal the changeling from Titania. It's really, really clever. Balanchine was so clever with his musical choices. I'm still amazed. When I watched it again, I still think that's really clever what he did.
And of course, the costumes and the scenery are just a wonder to behold as well.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah, beautiful. And it's very touching. And we, you know, how we rehearse for so long in the ballet, and then finally we get to play it for an audience, and it's just so gratifying when you hear people behind you laughing and clapping to things that you've been waiting to show them all this time. And it was so disappointing not to be able to do any more. And it was very strange conducting it for the live capture to a completely empty house,
right?
With no feedback whatsoever. That's so strange.
Other than the feedback from the empty seats.
Yeah,
literally.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what we're going to be talking with some other performing artists this hour. Is that the whole reason we're in this business is not necessarily for the ego gratification of an audience applauding, but for the communal experience that we're all missing.
Oh, we love to share. That's the thing. It's we just love to share our joy of it with everybody else, and so not being able to do that is really frustrating. Sitting at home.
As a stopgap, we'll be looking forward to hearing more about the stream that will become available. I should also mention that at sfballet.org, there is an announcement for what ticket holders can expect, and I'll quote from that. For those of you who have missed or will miss your performance of Midsummer Night's Dream, Program 5, Program 6, Jules, and or Romeo and Juliet, they're happy to offer a couple of options. They hope you'll consider donating your tickets back to SF Ballet as a tax-deductible contribution. In this crisis, I'm quoting, we need your support more than ever. If you've already donated or requested a credit for your tickets, you do not need to make a selection again. You may opt to receive a credit for the value of your tickets and can be used toward the 2021 season. And they've just announced that Helgi Thomasson will be bringing Midsummer Night's Dream into the 2021 repertory season.
Yeah, so they don't have to miss out. Can I just put a plea in here, David?
Of course.
Because, the donation of tickets is one of the greatest things anybody could do at the moment for the ballet. We're losing such a huge percentage of our box office income because of this that obviously we're in a financial pickle, to say the least.
Right.
And even if they credit the tickets towards next year, of course, that's just kicking the can down the road.
Right.
So if you can afford to donate rather than even credit, just please know that we'll be doing everything we can to make it up to you in the future.
That's a good point. Martin, can you share with us at this point what is the status of ballet employees and musicians?
As we speak, we're still being paid. The Board of Governors have given us some assurances we'll be paid for at least a couple of weeks, but that's all we have so far. So we are just dealing with the day-by-day situation. I know that the management are having to have come up with scenarios. We don't know when this ends, so it's very difficult to plan for exactly when we can get back into performing. And of course, our time in the opera house usually finishes at the end, in the middle of May, so we don't really have any performing space. So we're negotiating with the city and the opera to see if it's possible to grab a little bit of space into opera house so that we can do some performances before next season, as it were. I know that the company are very keen to make sure people know that we've suspended our season and not cancelled it, because we really want to be able to perform it at some point. So we're looking at every single option we can. We're spending every hour we can of coming up with creative solutions of how we can be ready to perform just as soon as it's possible to do so.
Right. Well, beyond the core of ballet dancers, you have the full orchestra and all the countless people behind the stage and behind the scenes that are preparing costumes and that wash the costumes and that are addressing the lights. So this is affecting...
Yes, front of house, wigs and costumes, crew, electricians, stage managers, it's a huge... It takes a lot of people to put on ballet.
And this is a robust organization, too, that can handle a bit of a storm, but not this sort of a tornado. Imagine what just people that are working on a contract basis or a freelance basis are going through.
Well, I know that a lot of the freelance musicians have just had their work completely removed because they have no safeguards. I will say we're very lucky in the ballet. We have some safeguards, but, of course, we can't legislate for everything that's going to happen. But I just feel very sorry for the contract musicians who would have got work.
Right, and I'll be talking later this hour with some freelance jazz musicians as well that have had to cancel tours and virtually all local gigs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shocking situation for everybody, and my heart goes out to anybody. Yeah. My orchestra are sitting at home wondering what it is they can do to help the situation. I know they're coming very creative ways, and the dancers are doing incredibly creative, have ideas about how we can make content so that we can share it with our public and things like that. But I think we're all in shell shock, actually, as well.
Yeah, and I was mentioning before how you can't just, okay, let's, the uncertainty of everything. It's not like, okay, May 1, we can plan beyond that. We don't know what the date is going to be. And then you can't just up and perform a ballet or an orchestra. You've got rehearsals to deal with and tech to deal with.
I mean, at the very least, we were going to do Romeo and Juliet on, I think it was opening on May the 2nd. And even if everything happens magically, be available again after April the 30th. It takes us at least 2 weeks to put together a ballet like that. Can you imagine there's 70 dancers, there's 70 odd musicians, and the
some of them are quite odd. I know them, some of them as being quite odd, so that's true.
Yeah, they are. I can't say that. But you know, there's so many things factors to put together, and you just can't put it together in no time at all. I think we were hoping to, if it was possible, to do something else at that time, but we just can't plan for anything. It makes it almost impossible. And who knows what the public's appetite at that particular time will be as well. You know, everything I read, it's going to be a long time before we can really get back to performing normally.
A great wheel that has to turn ever so slowly to get moving again.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep in touch with you. What are you doing with your time other than some score study? And imagine your family's getting to know you again.
Well, yeah.
Maybe too well.
I'm being a homeschool teacher, like I think most other parents are in the country now.
How old are your kids?
They're 9 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it's day two or day three of homeschool, so it's not going so badly. But
a lot of energy there to bottle up.
A lot of energy, yeah. So far, so good. But every day we have a meeting. We have a phone meeting with the senior team at the ballet to try and work out the next steps. I've spent a couple of days trying to work on the live stream, so that's ready to go out. That was done. There's a few things I've been meaning to do for a while. We have a couple of CDs that the orchestra recorded in years gone by, which haven't really been released yet. So I should be spending some time making sure that they can be released as soon as we can. So I'm trying to keep busy. I'm trying to watch. I just made use of the Berlin Philharmonic's fantastic website where you can see all their concerts, and they've allowed it to be free for next month. And so I've been watching a few concerts of that. I saw a wonderful performance of the Strauss Oboe Concerto from an old friend of mine from my college days.
Oh, nice. That
was
nice.
Lovely to see that. So I've been trying to, you know, reconnect myself with some music which I don't get a chance to listen to as well. So because I'm so busy with the ballet usually that I don't often get a chance to listen to music. So
right.
That's kind of nice. There's always pluses. But I'll tell you what, I'd rather be rehearsing for programs 5 and 6 and telling you how our world premiere is going and things like that. But
right.
Sadly not.
Well, on the front of organizations offering things online, Yannick Nezet-Séguin on Thursday's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, their final concert with the Philadelphia Orchestra before going dark, which they recorded in concert dress and in an empty hall of Beethoven's 5th and 6th, as well as other prior concerts, are going to be available at philorc.org. The Metropolitan Opera is giving a different opera each evening free at metopera.org. And, of course, the San Francisco Symphony had to cancel their New York and European tours. This was to be MTT's final tour with the orchestra he's led for some 25 years. But they also announced that they're going to be streaming some of the critically acclaimed programs that MTT has done. The Keeping Score TV series will be available for free globally online streaming. Learn more at sfsymphony.org. Martin, I had asked a question prior to us coming on. What gives you solace in these troubled times?
In terms of music,
yeah.
You mean? Well, I've been listening to some music that I haven't heard for a while. From my old town, as it were, of England, going back to the music of Edward Elgar, which I find very uplifting and noble. So I suggested that we perhaps listen to a little bit of some of the First Symphony, which was one of these great first pieces. The slow movement is just makes me full of pride to be a musician, pride to know that classical music touches everybody's heart.
Let's hear a little bit of Sir Edward Elgar's Symphony No. 1 in A flat major, the opening movement. Martin West, thanks so much for taking some time today.
Okay, thanks so much for having me. Bye.
Cheers. Still to come, we'll be talking with Bill English from the San Francisco Playhouse to see how folks in front of the spotlight and behind the spotlight at that august organization are weathering the storm. I'll also talk with freelance musicians Rick Walsh, Matt Zamella, and Mads Tolling. Peter Robinson will offer some ideas for what to do to shelter in place as well. Stay with us here on Open Air. Music of Sir Edward Elgar from his Symphony No. 1, First Movement, a favorite piece and composer of British conductor Martin West, principal conductor of the San Francisco Ballet. Get ballet updates at sfballet.org. A very good afternoon to you. I'm David LaTulipe, offering a very unusual open air today with phone guests instead of live and studio guests to talk about not what is they're about to perform for you here in the Bay Area, but to say what they're not about to do and how it's affected them. My next guest is a good friend and freelance violinist, Matt Zamella, who has lost a few gigs, to say the least. He's been heard in the Berklee Symphony Orchestra, as well as the SF Ballet and other area ensembles, and is quite a jazz musician as well. And I'm pleased to join him by phone. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, David. How are you, brother?
I'm good, bro. We just talked with Martin West about this great machine that is the SF Ballet organization and how that's ground to a halt. And that's a organization that's protected by a lot of union provisions, but a lot of folks associated with the ballet and other smaller organizations don't have that built-in safety net. So I'm wondering how you're doing, my friend.
Well, thank you. I'm doing all right. First, I should mention, I have not personally worked with the SF Ballet, but I did get to work with Maestro West back in January with a collaboration with Berklee Symphony and the San Francisco Conservatory. I'm doing all right. You know, I think like a lot of other freelancers in the Bay Area, members of a group that's lovingly referred to as the Freeway Philharmonic, we all saw an extraordinary amount of work evaporate in about 48 hours. For me, maybe a week and a half ago, I started seeing people posting about work being canceled. And my groups kind of hung on for a bit, and then inevitably, the other shoe dropped. And so it's been a bit of a gut punch. Frankly, I think a lot of us who are freelancers tend to stack up a lot of work in the spring as much as possible, because then we head into the summer months And there are festivals that happen, but, you know, for a lot of us, work kind of takes a downturn at that point. So you try to store all your acorns, as it were. And now that's just gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of wild. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild.
Right. I noticed that you posted that given some of the organizations you're involved in, you're hoping that the organizations come through and, you know, basically do the right thing, even though it's going to be painful, and take care of their folks that they've engaged in some way.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, well, first of all, I mean, we all know that even organizations that are on a level financially, like the Metropolitan Opera or San Francisco Symphony or SF Ballet, all these organizations kind of operate on a razor thin margin, you know, trying to figure out all the financials. It's not like these are big corporations. These are performing arts organizations. And so I understand, and I think a lot of us understand, that a lot of these, especially regional orchestras, are even more precarious with their financials. And so it's been heartening to see groups that I actually don't play with, like Monterey Symphony, or I believe Fresno, San Jose Chamber Orchestra, that apparently had the resources to take care of their musicians, at least for the set, like for the upcoming set that had to be canceled. They have a little bit of compensation. One of the groups that I play with, Opera San Jose, they contacted us, I think, a little over a week ago, and let us know that they were canceling the entire run of Magic Flute. And understandably, of course, this is a crisis that none of us has ever lived through. And even though they, you know, they're not able to pay us all out, they immediately started a fund for musician relief. I believe Santa Cruz Symphony has done the same. And so that is just so appreciated, to witness that happening and to see people taking care of the people who make their product a product. If you don't have musicians playing it, then what do you have?
Right.
For me, it's more of, you know, yes, it's a gut punch, and yes, there's a lot of people panicking out there right now, but there's some amazing goodness happening as a result.
Right.
You see people really stepping up in any way that they're able to, you know, to help out those in their community, to keep this community vibrant. Because, you know, as Martin was saying, I mean, who knows? It's going to take a while to get this wheel moving, you know,
right,
back at the rate that it was. Mm-hmm. And we got to make sure that people are being taken care of so that they can stay, so that they're able to stay in the Bay Area, which is a difficult place to live in, even if you're not in the performing arts.
Right.
It's just really wonderful to see people stepping up. Mm. And what's crazy is even in this, well, this is day three of quarantine. Yeah, that sounds about right. We got people reaching out to one another in a way that maybe we weren't always. You know, we're always busy running from one gig to the next, to the next, to the next, and you hang out with the people that are on that gig. And that's a beautiful thing. But in the past couple days, I've had video chats and virtual hangs, you know, with friends that sustain me. And we sustain one another. And how special is it that this virus and this sheltering in place order is kind of bringing us all down to the same level, and the way that we can help is by reaching out to one another. And whether that be supporting a fund for musicians' relief or reaching out to someone with video chat or teaching a lesson with video chat, or even, you know, I'm talking to a couple of my friends in the scene, and we're talking about, you know, working on some new tracks remotely. You send me something, I'll send you something back. I think there's going to be a lot of positivity that's necessary for our survival, and will also just be all the more beautiful and all the more satisfying to experience once we're out of this tunnel.
Right. Beautiful thoughts there, Matt. Hey, we've been listening to your voice for so much. Let's hear you play your fiddle a little bit, shall we? Tell us a little bit about your the track Mercy, Mercy, Mercy from Vitamin M that you were involved in.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a chamber group that I'm honored to be a part of. It was founded by Emily Onderdonk, who's a local violist and arranger and a former member of Quartet San Francisco, as am I. And she formed this group. It's a string quartet, but unlike other string quartets, we also have a bassoon and an accordion. So that's a little bit different.
Right.
However, on this track, this is from our debut and as of yet only album. This is string quartet with myself and Philip Brezina on violins, Emily Onderdonk on viola, and cello legend Mark Summer.
Nice.
Laying down the bass. And great tune that Cannonball Adderley made famous and composed by Joe Zawinul. And we just have a good time with it.
Nice.
And music is medicine, so let's be healed.
Mercy, Mercy, Mercy from the group Vitamin M, which Matt is involved in. Let's a little bit. Matt, stay with us, though. We're going to talk with Mads Tolling in just a second. I'd like to have you part of the conversation. Stay with us.
Sure, sure.
Oh, yeah. Little Mercy, Mercy, Mercy from Matt Zamella and friends from Vitamin M. You can catch that track on Spotify, or better yet, buy a hard copy of it. Wouldn't that be a good suggestion, Matt?
Oh, I believe so. Absolutely, indeed.
Matt Zamella, my good friend, on the line, talking about a change of pace for everyone involved in the performing arts, some hardship and some love going on. Thanks, Matt. Let's involve our other good friend, Mads Tolling. Mads, are you with us?
I am, yes.
Hey, Mads, well, you just had to cancel a whole tour of Denmark that you had planned. That's got to hurt.
Yeah, that hurts pretty bad. It was quite dramatic. Literally 4 hours before I was supposed to get on the flight, I get all these emails and all these calls from Denmark after the Prime Minister just held a speech where she was basically saying that we're going to shut down all these public institutions. And that was kind of early on. That was on the 10th that it happened, or the 11th. And at the same time, I got heard from basically 30% of the venues I was supposed to play at that they canceled all at the same time. And of course, at this point, the whole country shut down. They closed the borders. They're taking it very seriously. They have like 1,100 cases. So yeah, Denmark got hit hard, and so did this tour. I was supposed to play there, 10-day tour in Sweden, Denmark, and Germany. And that's history now. It's not gonna happen. Of course, we're trying to reschedule everything.
Right. Well, you know, part of the issue that I think you're dealing with is that a lot of the expense towards putting on this tour went up front. You can't buy back publicity. You know, the ads that you take out or the publicity you do is not going to come back to you. And I still see ads on the buses for Midsummer Night's Dream and the dates. These things happen so far in advance that it's got to be difficult. And then you maybe make some of that nut back in the performances. But nonetheless, the burden has already happened, and you're hoping to make back something that you already put up front.
Yeah.
And big groups like the Met and like the the ballet, the symphony have built-in safety nets and, you know, larger union organizations to take care of their members. But something like a small touring group such as you and the Mads Men, what happens? Are these guys just basically waiting for the next shoe to drop?
Well, I mean, as far as the venues, I always believe in the long-term prospect. I mean, basically, the venues that we would predominantly be playing would be jazz clubs and some theaters. You know, they're on a very tight rope as well. And so, yeah, you're just trying to make it work, maybe get half the fee now and half the fee when you reschedule. But, yeah, it's a bad situation. We'll hope that the public, the government over there will step in and make something happen on that level, but it's unclear what they're doing exactly. But, yeah, musicians, of course, entertainers are going to be front row in terms of people that are going to feel the brunt of this, and that was definitely, I definitely felt that in a very real way right then and there.
Right. Well, Mads, we still have Matt Zamella on the line if you want to say hey.
Hey, Matt.
What's happening, brother?
Yeah,
my man.
Always lovely to see you guys perform together in those rare occasions. Now, you know, one thing I talked with Martin West is that part of this uncertainty is it's not like we know the date when this is all going to be over, right? We're also in a business that craves an audience. Now, not just for affirmation and ego gratification, but for that unique group experience, either as a performer or as an audience member. And frankly, moving to just online while a temporary fix isn't going to quite cut it for our souls.
I agree. I think what I'm looking at this break as this quarantine is an opportunity to kind of work on the craft. You know, and
I'm getting my scales back in shape myself.
Like, yeah, you know, it's something that a lot of us who are busy running around, you know, and loving having all these different projects, you know, as a constant source of inspiration. Now's a time where we can even get better. And while the online thing is going to last for a while, you know, yes, it is a good stopgap. What I think we can do is really put in that extra effort and bring the product just blazing out of the gates, you know, once we're, oh my God, can you imagine how beautiful it's going to be to go see a show and to play a show and to feel that interaction with the audience again?
Right. Whew. Right.
That's going to be epic. Absolutely epic.
Well, I insist you gentlemen both keep me in touch as we move forward. Let's have a face chat something, or maybe we'll can play together online.
Absolutely. Sounds like fun.
Mads Toling, Matt Zamella, more power to you, and keep on keeping on.
Much love, David. Much love, Mads.
We got you guys. It's great talking to you.
Amen.
From Mads Toling's CD, Mads Toling and the Mads Men playing the 60, an appropriate tune, plays the 60s. Here's an appropriate tune and something that we hope we can all rise to. Mission Impossible. Still to come, a talk with Bill English from San Francisco Playhouse, and also Peter Robinson contributing to a shelter-in-place suggestions. Mads Toling and the Mads Men playing the 60s. Lalo Schifrin's Mission Impossible. I'm David LaTulipe, and you're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio. Pleased to be joined by co-founding artistic director of the San Francisco Playhouse, Bill English. Bill, welcome to Open Air.
Hey.
I should say welcome.
Good talking to you, Dave.
Welcome back to Open Air. I would say we could all spend some time
out there in a while.
I should say we could all spend some time at the San Francisco Playhouse Empathy Gym, but would have to stay 4 to 6 feet away from each other.
That's it. It's we're in the empathy at a distance phase of our culture at the moment, you know, but that's what we're required to do, and I think we're all into it, you know. I think it's important. I'm glad to see the Bay Area, you know, being the leader, I think, in the nation for, you know, shelter at home. I think it's the only thing that's going to stop this terrible disease.
And what is the San Francisco Playhouse doing to either take care of their people, or how can we be looking forward when we don't know the end?
Well, that's the most difficult thing. You know, we're playing it day by day. Everything changes pretty much hourly. You know, we had to shut down our just about to open production of Real Women Have Curves. It was about to go into tech. The set was up. All the costumes had been purchased. You know, the rehearsals were pretty much complete. I feel like listening to the ballet, we're kind of in the same boat. We're like raring to go. At least they got in a performance, which is lovely, but we're kind of having to mothball the show. And thanks to the generosity of our board, we're going to be able to pay the actors and the crew, you know, for the work that they've done, you know, for the run of the show. And we're also trying to keep everybody working. We've got a lot of projects working. We've got a season announcement party coming up that it looks like we're likely to be doing virtually, which should be interesting and fun.
I guess it would be BYOB for that one, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Break out the champagne. Susie's going to send around the recipe for her crack bread that everybody can make up. And
should mention Susie Damolano, your wife and partner in crime, co-artistic director of San Francisco Playhouse, also a frequent guest on the show.
That's correct. Yeah.
So some organizations are offering links to ticket holders, to online live streams or past performances. Anything like that on the theater front that you'd like to share, either from the San Francisco Playhouse or other groups that you've heard about?
Well, unfortunately, we weren't really quite ready to do a tape. You know, we were just going into tech, so we hadn't had a dress rehearsal, let alone any previews or performances. So we really didn't have anything to tape. I'm excited to see some of the shows that are going to be. Berkeley Rep, I think, has a show that's going to be available to watch online. And ACT, I know, is going to have Gloria at least up. So, you know, I encourage people to watch theater. I know Lily Janik wrote a wonderful article about how, you know, at least we were going to be able to explore, you know, during this downtime, we were going to be able to explore the possibility of live theater in coming to us through digital means. You know, it's still very much live, you know, and not edited as in a movie, you know. So I'm excited to see what may come of that.
And I'm also hopeful that once at least part of this quarantine in place is lifted, we can have some of the San Francisco Playhouse folks back into our studios for a live table read of perhaps a radio drama or something that's coming up in the Playhouse.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about maybe generating some radio plays, you know, as time goes on that people can tune into. You know, I used to love radio plays when I was a kid, but you don't see too much of that anymore.
Well, let's see if we can make that happen.
Do one with you, Dave.
That'd be lovely. What do you know of resources for actors? I know that the Actors Fund, actorsfund.org, is offering some financial emergency resources. What else is out there for actors to go to?
I think the Theater Bay Area is working on developing a fund. The San Francisco Foundation I just read this morning, has opened up a grant that theaters can apply for to have relief from rent and also to help pay actors. You know, I think there's a lot of stuff out there. The federal government is going to send people money. You know, it's tough. It's going to be so tough on everybody. It's like, you know, feels like almost like a wartime situation where the enemy is so scary, and the danger is so high that we kind of have to all just throw all of our energy into winning the war.
Right, right. Well, I don't know if you've been affected by what I'm just now reading about brown paper tickets for funds that are owed to theaters as being, they're having difficulty. Are you involved with brown paper tickets at all through the Playhouse?
No, we don't. But I think they tend to handle a lot of very much smaller theaters and a lot of kind of more single events, you know.
Right.
I see. You know, I know that's where I bought tickets to brown paper tickets. What was the article about?
Well, apparently, you know, brown paper tickets is allegedly sending checks out to box offices around the country that were mailed out, but will probably bounce because they weren't prepared for the onslaught of so much having to be paid out. So there's some problems on that front. Let's hope that's solved. Well, let's stay close to SF Playhouse for updates. And, Bill, I'd love to have you and Susie on again soon to talk about all the good work you're doing there.
No, absolutely. We love coming in to talk to you, Dave. And we're going to be forging onward. You know, we're planning our upcoming season and thinking about Follies for the summer. And
all right. I was so looking forward to that.
We're just looking to the future and trying to keep us much of our staff, our fantastic staff, employed as long as possible.
Well, we'll be looking to you for some inspiration. Thanks so much for spending some time, Bill.
You bet. My pleasure, Dave.
Well, our good friend Peter Robinson is standing by for a segment about what to be doing during these possibly lonely times. We'll be talking with him in just a moment. This feeling ain't right. There goes my baby. There goes my heart. And here comes Peter Robinson. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And that, of course, is the great voice of Roy Orbison, who's tuning us in. And I, too, like a lot of your earlier guests, have been listening to music. And sometimes I've found that even sad songs about being alone can, in their own way, bring a sense of cheerfulness. So I thought about Roy Orbison, but I was also thinking about a very different old-time Elvis Presley, who I think could have been one of the great opera singers, certainly a ballad singer. And I was listening the other night to the Annunciation in a song of his called Are You Lonely Tonight? And I listened to the kind of verbiage when he starts speaking against the background, because I often think music can reach parts of the body that words sometimes don't reach. So for me, one of the things I've been doing during this stay alone, stay at home period is enjoying some good music. So why did we hear Elvis to kick off with?
Then more with Peter Robinson. Does your mammal stray to a bright summer day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep and picture me there? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight? Indeed, listening to that enunciation is quite lovely. Peter, thank you for suggesting that. Now, you're quite a bibliophile, sheltering in place. I imagine this is a good time for you, catching up on some good reads. Solitude, and I imagine, is your friend.
Indeed, yeah. In fact, I think it was Blaise Pascal who said to sit in a room alone by yourself is a major achievement. So I have been doing two types of things. I've been listening to books, and I liked what the theatre person was saying about listening to plays. You know, for example, Dylan Thomas's play, Under Milk Wood, is a great radio play, and you can get it on CD, so you can listen to the theatre literally on your radio. And one reader who I think is not only a great writer but a great reader is John le Carré. So I went back to The Spy Who Came In From the Cold. And this is not only a thriller about the Cold War period set in Berlin, about a spy exchange. The movie, of course, was famous with Richard Burton. But as I say, the voices that John le Carré takes on, from German accents to London accents to Cockney accents to Foreign Office accents, he has that gift of catching dialogue and bringing the characters to life. So that, for me, was one of the books that I chose to listen to. I also tuned into an old black-and-white movie called The Third Man, and that opens with a great theme, the Harry Lime theme, where, again, I found the story written by Graham Greene, filmed in 1947 in Vienna, the story of a divided city, had that haunting effect. And a lot of the listeners and people you've been interviewing are speaking about wartime. This is post-war Berlin, so you get that eerie feeling that you are living alone in this case, a bomb city. So some of these wonderful opportunities during this time, which for me has also included walks, hikes, particularly in Marin. Here I go, deep breathing. Everyone in Marin knows about deep breath, taking a breath, letting it out, and then moving on with the rest of your life. And then if you're into museums, because we often talk about museums, there is a visual tour of museums through the magazine Travel and Life. And this takes you into different museums where on a normal day you may have been going to the Legion of Honor or down to the De Young. Here's a chance to explore some of the world's great museums. And then, just as this program has done, reaching friends on the telephone, helping somebody who may be having an anxious moment, making contact through the human voice. All these things seem very simple, very straightforward, but they're great ways of coping with those moments of anxiety, which I think uncertainty brings.
Thank
and then
you,
I'll go back to my old tunes again. It could be something from Peggy Lee, or it could even be Waylon Jennings. It could
well,
be as simple as taking my soul back to Texas.
Well,
so
Peter,
those are some of the little ups and downs I've been experiencing. And I even blew the dust off my old tennis racket the other day. And though we kept arms apart, I had a slow but meaningful game of doubles. And this time, nobody cheated. So it was a good day out.
It's all right, Peter.
In Berlin, even if the world outside has got a sense of doom and gloom.
Well, thank you for the positive suggestions, Peter, and we'll have you on again as soon as we're able. Peter Robinson, our regular contributor to Open Air. Well, let's go out on a positive note and a blast from the past. Miss Peggy Lee and You Gotta Have Heart.
You gotta hope for us all. Mustn't sit around and hope for us all. Nothing's half as bad as it may appear. Wait till next year and hope. When your luck is batting zero, get your chin above the floor. Mister, you can be a hero. You can open any door. There's nothing to it but to do it. You gotta have hearts.
Por razón.
Genius, of course, but keep that old horse before the cart. First, you gotta have heart.
Corazón, corazón.
When your luck is batting zero, get your chin above the floor. Mister, you can be a hero. You can open any door. There's nothing to it but to do it. You gotta.